How many of us are disturbed that the little piggies didn't have any pants on? I kept looking at them going, are you male or female? I'm trying to figure, and of course, the one who built his house with bricks was left with his pants on. They were caught with their pants down, but the guy with the bricks, he was okay. This is actually a metaphor we're using throughout this series. If we take a look at money, we're trying to personalize money as a personal force. And in our society right now, everyone's scared, be very afraid. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Oh, the economy. Oh, the thing. There is an absolute fear that we have about money. And maybe some of it is justified because maybe some of us right now are not in a good place financially. And I really don't think there's anything we could do better to start off this new year than take a look at something that presses into us on a regular basis. So let's pray before we go any further. God, I pray that we would see the power of money in a profound way, the positives, the negatives, the watch outs, the concerns. I pray that you would at least help us to step out of our stressful environments that we operate in and come into this place, not just as an oasis, but also as a prepping ground for something new. I pray that we would see you in a fresh and life-changing way today. Help my words to bring people closer to your heart and to your ultimate ways of having peace. I pray these things according to your name. Amen. Money is a power that can be used for good or for evil. It is a power. We live in a capitalistic society. I like capitalism. I like it better than any other form of economy. However, it's not perfect, but at the same time, there are people who have formed capitalism that I disagree with. One of them is Adam Smith, who is known by many to be really the founder of American capitalistic society. He is a Scottish economist. He was heavily influential with Keynesian theory. And Adam Smith, talking about money, said this. He said, money is a neutral medium of exchange. I do not agree with that at all. Money is not a neutral medium of exchange. The color orange is a neutral thing. It doesn't affect you. This color orange will not alter your goals. It won't make you live differently today. I like orange. You might like red. Those colors cannot affect the trajectory of our life. I like vanilla. You like chocolate. That is a neutral. Flavoring an ice cream is a neutral thing that really won't cause us to do one thing or another. Let's just kind of turn to the person next to you who you don't know. Find someone who you don't know. Whoever's beside you, the person you know least. Just tell them right now, what is your favorite color? Go ahead and tell them that right now. All right. Now tell that person your favorite flavor of Grater's ice cream. Go ahead and tell them that, your favorite flavor. Okay. Now tell that person right now exactly how much you have in liquid assets right now. Tell that person right now. Then tell that person as well. Tell them how many sexual partners you have. Tell them that person that. Okay, stop. Don't do that. That actually was there not just for shock value, but for a point. Let me explain this to you. We had no problems talking about our color or the same color of flavor of vanilla ice cream. Why? Because those are neutral things. They're not personal. They don't affect us. I'm very certain nobody, other than if you're married, your spouse, knows exactly your financial situation. I'm very confident with all the little dinner conversations you have, it never gets down to ever telling somebody how much you have in the bank. It's a personal issue that it has a control over us. You're probably more likely to talk with your friends about your sexual experiences, your sexual past, than to talk with your friends about your exact financial standing right now. Anything that is neutral, we would have an open book able to talk about. But money actually controls us. It moves us. I know your friends right now are in the same economic bandwidth as you are. Your friendships are people who live in about the same kind of house that you have, take about the same kind of vacations you have, probably have about the same paying jobs for you. Money, if money can group our friendships according to economics, it is not neutral. It is not. UC won our bowl game. UC, woo, yes, UC. A little bit of sad stuff there as we see the Big East crumbling right before our eyes. Many people are saying the major force for college athletics realigning, all the different conferences realigning, is ESPN. ESPN because wanting to group people so they can get better advertising dollars. Let me tell you something. Money causes academic institutions to alter. Money would cause an academic institution, it's about, supposed to be about learning, would cause them to change things based purely on economics. It's the power of money. I have a friend that just left today, went back home. We've had some friends that are from England. They've been in our house for about 5 days. And he was in our house as well in December for a number of times. Have you had anybody stay in your house, stay in your apartment that is not related to you for any extended period of time? The Bible talks a lot about hospitality, being hospitable to one another, being generous and gracious to one another. I know when I was younger and I really didn't have any extra money at all, if I was going to a town where I needed to do something, I'd think, do I have any friends there so I can stay in that place? And then if friends were traveling and they need to stay in our place, they could stay in our place. But the older you get, the more disposable income you get, and all of a sudden you don't want to put somebody out, you go to a hotel. You go to a hotel, you have somebody stay at a hotel. Why? Because you think, oh, it'll be too troublesome to interact with each other. My house isn't nice enough. I don't have a separate room. I don't have a king-size bed. When there's core things that are in the Bible, like hospitality, and someone like me who reads the Bible thinks, ooh, I can't do that. There's something wrong because money, the availability of money, actually alters habits. Now, this is not unusual for 21st century Americans. This is not we have lived in difficult times. All human beings in all times have wrestled with the personal power of money, including people in first century Palestine. Jesus, born and raised and operated in that region of the world, and he actually talks about money more than anything else. Yeah, just about anything. I'll talk about more than heaven and hell combined. He's got 39 parables that are stories he's made up to articulate a true principle. Of the 39 parables, 11 of them are about money. 11. If you take a look at all of the verses in the Gospels, which are the first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which contain the primary events and teachings in Jesus' life, if you look at all of those verses, 1 in 7 verses are devoted to money and possessions. This was a big deal for Jesus. Why is that? Well, we'll get a little hint of that in the book of John, chapter 10, verse 11 to 14, when he says this. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd who does not own the sheep sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. He contrasts himself with shepherds who are merely hired to do a job. And he says, no, I don't operate just because I'm hired to do a job. I take personal ownership and personal care over my sheep, over people. And he says, there is a wolf. Another time he says, their thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. There is a personal entity that is coming to take peace from us, that's coming to take joy from us, that's coming to take a great relationship with God from us. And Jesus says, I'm about warding off the wolf. According to Jesus' teachings, the most significant and prevalent wolf that will come to get you is the wolf of money. It is a personal force that will cause you to be afraid, cause you to be paranoid, cause you to want the wolf more than you want God himself. To help us understand that there is an actual personal entity, not a neutral force, a personal entity that's actually trying to take our joy and give us stupid advice that's spiritually unsound and financially unsound. Let's take a look at what some of the things the wolf tells us in our society.
Big bad wolf.
Okay, Jerry, let's take some callers. The question of the day is, what's your New Year's resolution? Terry from Marymount.
Hey, Wolf, I want to get out of debt this year. Do you have any tips for me?
Terry, you want to get out of debt? Two words, Terry. Credit cards. You ever heard of that, Terry? Please tell me you've heard of that. You put all your debt, you put it on a credit card. Oh, but Wolfie, I already have debt on a credit card. You move that onto another credit card, Terry. It's called rollover. You just keep on moving that down the line. Visa owns your debt. Totally legal. Everybody's doing it. Boom. You are debt-free. It's pathetic to me that you don't know this. You have this little magic card that can pay for vacations. magic. Listen, you swipe your little Visa card and you are flying anywhere you want while Visa deals with your debt. Do you understand that? Go live it up. Have you heard of the phrase 12-month same as cash, Terry? That means a random dude walks up to you and is like, hey, Terry, you don't know me. I want to give you all this free money. You can do whatever you want with it now. Oh, daddy, I want to learn how to ride horses. Oh, daughter, we can't ride horses because it's so expensive. But man, she really wants it. Daddy, that's so important to me. Now you have this money. She can ride horses. She will never need to know how to ride a horse, but she's happy. You're happy. Her friends are totally jealous because, oh my gosh, look who's got horse riding lessons. Can I have that, mommy and daddy?
No, because I don't know how to use a credit card.
Who cares? They're the dumb ones. You're the smart one. You're living the dream. You're debt-free now. God bless America. We are done.
Big Bad Wolf.
Okay, Jerry, let's take another call. Jim from Indian Hill. Jim, what's your New Year's resolution?
I've been thinking about prioritizing my savings this year. How much do I really need to save?
You're living in Indian Hill. Why bother even calling me? Well played, a man after my own heart. I should be calling you, am I right? Wow, you Skyping in from somewhere? Where are you at? You in Argentina? Whew, serious question though, and I'm gonna break it down for you pretty seriously. Clearly you're making six figures, so this is simple. Here's the formula, this is what you need to do. Take what you think you need in savings, now double it, now triple that, then quadruple that, and you're about half of what you need for an emergency fund, college fund, retirement account, medical bills, beach house, your boat, your second boat, third boat. Jim, you are already behind. You need to start saving now. What if your stocks tank? What if you're forced into early retirement? Who's gonna pay for the alimony then, Jim? You need to be prepared for anything. And if you save up enough money, you can be cryogenically frozen and never die. Think about that, Jim. Wolf out. Bacon donut in.
Big Bad Wolf.
It doesn't matter what income level you and I are at. What we just want to do is just check some of the impulses we have, the assumptions we have about money, because perhaps they're not healthy. Perhaps it is the wolf deluding us. He is a person. Once you start seeing money as a person, you realize he has a personality. Five aspects of the wolf's personality, of money's personality. Number one, the wolf is a narcissist. The wolf is a narcissist. The wolf will have everything revolve around him all the time. Some of us are in careers. Many of us are in careers right now that you don't like. You're bummed out at Sunday because tomorrow is Monday and you got to go to work. And you chose your occupation perhaps only because of the income you could earn. You didn't prioritize the things you liked. You didn't prioritize the way you were naturally wired. You perhaps just prioritized the income earning capacity, and now your life is adjusted and you see no way out. That's what the wolf does. Every decision is first and foremost what it means to me financially. He is a narcissist. First person I heard talk about this was Susie Orman, financial counselor. She talks about if you want to know how you deal with money, think through your earliest financial memory. If you can identify your earliest financial memory, you'll notice something that has marked you and is impacting how you think and handle money today. I thought, oh, that's ridiculous, until I actually tried it. I realized my earliest financial memory was when I was a little kid going to my parents' Presbyterian church in the morning. I'd have my nice little suit on. My dad would give me an offering envelope, and in the bottom of that envelope, wedged in the corner, was a dime. And so I was supposed to take this offering envelope, put it in the basket, kind of like to give God something. And then as time went on, he did this all the way till I was 16. By the time I was 16, God had gotten a 50% raise. God had gotten a raise from a dime to 15 cents. And I think back on that, and it actually did mark me for two reasons, two ways. Number one, it's one of the reasons why it was hard for me to become a giver, is because my dad did my giving for me. I never had to learn how to do that on my own. And then number two, I think actually dad, in some psychological way, my dad actually represented God in that transaction. And I viewed, if God is giving me, because even third graders know that a dime isn't worth a dime, you know, you understand that. I started to realize and think, gosh, God must just be cheap with me. He doesn't really lavish blessings. He doesn't really give abundant grace. Just gives barely enough. And I still struggle with that today. I assume that God is holding out on me. He's not holding out on me. This is what my earliest memory actually has influenced me. And yours probably does too. And here's the deal. Your earliest shoe size does not influence you. The earliest book that you read, you might remember it, it isn't part of your identity, but that money exercise works because money is a narcissistic personality. We'll have everything revolve around it. Jesus said in the book of Luke, chapter 16, verse 13, he said, "No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money," or God and mammon, an ancient term for treasure, possessions, money. No one can serve two masters. What does a master do to us? A master, if it's our parents, we're living under their roof, or if it's our boss, our master is a personal entity that gives us orders. Jesus says, God, I can place myself under him as he's my master, a personal entity who gives me marching orders, and I slot myself under him. I can do that. Or another personal master I can slot myself under is whatever money wants, whatever money says. And Jesus says, you can't have both ways. You can make money the center point of your life, but you can't have God at the center point of your life then. You choose. Which master do you want? Second thing that part of the personality profile of the wolf is he's a control freak. He's a control freak. He wants everything to be about what he wants. And the best control freaks are the ones who are controlling us and we don't even know. You know, it's our boyfriend who's just trying to protect us. No, he's a jerk. He's a jerk. Or it's our girlfriend who just really feels, no, she's psycho. She's absolutely psycho. Your friends know that, but you don't know that. The best control freaks are the ones who are controlling us and we don't even know it. Part of the reason why you're out in here right now and you're sitting in your seat and you're like, your butt's all puckered up. You're going, oh, I don't know, I want to be in. Because you're just, the wolf is telling you, this guy's just trying to control you. This is all a front to get you to give more money. It's a way to control you. No, it's not. We are going to talk about giving at some point in the series. It'll be woven through. But no, it's not the point. It is not the point. The wolf is trying to get you to believe there's some strange ulterior. There's not. I want to be open and vulnerable with where we are. Just be open and vulnerable for a moment. I'll answer the question I had earlier about money. Right now, I forgot about an account. I thought I had two. I've told everybody two. I have three little accounts that I have right now. I have a $1,600 account it's accruing right now because I have car insurance bill coming up and I got four drivers in my family. I hate paying for car insurance. I got $1,600 there. I've got an Ing account, Ing Direct. Electronically, money goes into there. And I actually got two little accounts in there. One of them is just for car maintenance, buy a new car. It used to be pretty nice size before Game Change campaign. It's still nice size. It's $6,000 I have in there. And then we've got a fund for a new couch. A new couch has got about $2,100 in that. Now, you might think, I can't believe you, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Your pastor, you have that much money? Or you might be, somebody might be saying, you are so irresponsible. That's all you have in short-term savings. We all have different perspectives on that, but I'm just saying, hey, I'm open and vulnerable. When I talk about it, it makes it not have control over me. The things that we talk about will not have control over us. The things that are hidden tend to control us. And part of what the control freak of the wolf, what he's trying to do is actually even keep me from sharing good financial news with you. I'll share some good financial news with you. Our fiscal budget here at Crossroads runs from September 1st to August 31st. Even though the calendar budget goes from obviously January 1st all the way through. But December, no matter what any nonprofit organization has as a fiscal budget, December is always make or break time. And as you knew, we talked a lot about the need for us to finish the calendar year strong. And I got to tell you, you finished it strong. We finished it strong. Well done. Awesome, awesome. As we tally up everything in December, we are, if you take a look at Game Change and normal ministry giving, our ministry fund, we are exactly on track where we projected to be. You're doing well. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I'll tell you what the wolf would tell me to do. The wolf would tell me, has told me, Brian, whoa, if things are going okay, then don't tell people. You can't tell people because they're going to sit there and go, oh, what's that? You don't need my money. I'm going to do something else. See, that's crazy. The wolf would say, hey, manage your donor base. Manage it. And you got to keep them on the edge, not thinking things are good. That's ridiculous. If we can't share good news like that, what can't we do? We can't give thankfulness to God. God has moved in his people. God is doing amazing things. And I just want to be able to say to God publicly, we all should, God, you're good. You are faithful. You really are. Thanks for enabling us to be in this place. But if we keep that stuff secretive, as the wolf would have, then the wolf ends up being the center of things and controlling. Not only is the wolf narcissistic, not only is he a control freak, but he is ever encroaching. We'll be watching football today and we'll hear, encroaching, number, I'm not sure exactly, what is encroaching? Is it this or, I can't remember what. Well, it should be just offsides. What's wrong with encroachment? You know, what is encroachment? Encroachment is when someone steps over the line and tries to take territory that's not theirs. It's encroaching. And the wolf is never satisfied behind the line that's in front of him. He always wants to go over the line. He always wants more, always. Whatever your smartphone is, there's always one that you want that's better than the one you have. You want to step over the line. Whatever car you have right now, there's always another one that you want. Or if you have the ultimate car right now and you bump into somebody who has the exact same car, never ask the question, how much you get it for? Never do that. Because then someone is going to feel like a loser. Someone will, because all of a sudden you're not happy with your car. Now you just feel ripped off. The wolf makes you feel like you're stupid because you paid $300 more for it or something like that. Savings are like this. You know, you get savings, you say, okay, I need to get this much, you get that much of savings, and then where do you go? Okay, I got that one, let's just keep that plan, let's get this much. Okay, good, let's get this much. And we keep every new level as a new standard, and then what happens? Something happens, and we've got to spend that money and drop down to here, and we go, oh gosh, things are rough, I'm a loser. What do you mean? You're four levels beyond what you ever wanted to be, but now the wolf has said there's a new absolute standard for us. Enough is never enough with the wolf. I saw an interesting study out of Princeton. I think studies that study happiness are fascinating. Trying to figure out what makes a happy person, what are the things that are involved in our lives if we're feeling good about where we are. Interesting one came out of Princeton not too long ago. They found that money does have a part in happiness. Duh, who figured? Would never have thought that. Yes, it does. And they actually found, according to their studies, that as a household, if you're in a household, a family, and you have a household income of $75,000, you can have happiness underneath that. It's just a little more difficult to slot your life around. But $75,000, what they found, is sort of the magic tipping point where you go, okay, money is not an option. And then what they found is incremental money beyond that does not add to your happiness level. That's really weird sounding. In fact, those of us who are making over $75,000 households, that cannot be. Because the study said that. It makes us feel better when we see more digits in our savings account. But in terms of the practicalities of happiness, once you get past $75,000, it doesn't make any difference. But the wolf would tell us, no way. Always more. John D. Rockefeller, who I think is probably the richest man in the history of the United States, maybe the world, especially when he was compared against gross domestic product of the nation of America. Someone asked him one time, how much is enough? And he said, just a little bit more. Enough is never enough. Not only is the wolf narcissist, a control freak, always taking more, wanting to go more, he's also unjust. The wolf is unjust, meaning the A leads to B doesn't always bring C. Meaning that just because I do this and believe that doesn't necessarily mean that I will have that. We'll be talking over the next few weeks about some of the timeless principles in the Bible that simply work, that can get us into a great place financially. They are in there. There's really sound, practical advice that your financial planner who maybe doesn't read the Bible or somebody who does read the Bible can tell you. There are some things. At the same time, the wolf is unjust. There's no guarantees. So let's look at two extremes. We got this extreme over here. Let's call this the right-wing fundamentalist televangelist. Okay, the right-wing fundamentalist televangelist will say, you're going to be blessed. God wants you to be rich. He wants you to be wealthy, health, and wealth. You just name it and claim it. If something isn't good in your life, it's because you got to give more. You got to be better. You got to be more. You want to give. You got to give like overflow, pressed down, smashing over. You just give. And, you know? And I got my white belt, my wife got her purple eyes. You just give. You know, we got. And there's people who believe, maybe not that kind of extreme accent, but believe, hey, if all I have to do is keep the Ten Commandments, love Jesus, tithe, give, and everything will be fine. And you know what? I know plenty of people who do all those things, but man, life is still a financial grind for them. Still, there are people that don't do the right things at all, hoard all their money themselves, and they just do great financially. So extreme over here. Okay. Then, if this is fundamentalist theists, then over here, let's talk about atheistic capitalists. Okay, so somebody who doesn't believe in God as a capitalist could say, you know what, I have what I have right now because I've worked hard, I've gotten a good education, I work my job, I take advantage of it, and here I am with what I have, boom. And absolutely, getting an education majorly helps. Absolutely, applying yourself, no, but come on. You didn't do this in and of your own. You can't just say, hey, I could do it. No, if you were born on a hill in Mongolia, you would not be where you are right now. You simply would not. In fact, if you were born in rural poverty in Kentucky, you wouldn't be where you are right now. You are where you are right now because of unique opportunities that were made available to you that weren't made available to anybody else. It is unjust. It's not equal. It makes no sense. Dave McCall is my favorite author. He's awesome. Any book that he writes, I read. Truman, Adams, Brooklyn Bridge, whatever, it doesn't matter. He writes it, I read it. And he spoke up at Miami University a few years ago, and I thought what he said in his little address was fascinating. He talks about what history teaches us always at all times. Here's what he said, I wrote it down. If you know history, you know there is no such thing as a self-made man or self-made woman. We are shaped by people we have never met. Why is it that you and I have opportunities that people in other countries don't? I like our opportunities. I'm glad. I'm saying work the capitalistic principles, many of which are found in the Bible. I'm saying it's fine. And I'm saying, hey, give. I'm just saying, just because you do one or the other does not guarantee anything. The wolf is unjust. One of the difficult problems in the Bible is the regular problem of how is it that the wicked prosper? How is it the bad people have a lot of money? It's a common problem. The book of Jeremiah, chapter 12, 1-3, it says this. Righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you, yet I would plead my case before you. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? You plant them and they take root, they grow and produce fruit. You are near in their mouth and far from their heart, but you, O Lord, know me. You see me and you test my heart toward you. You know me, God. You know me. I'm walking uprightly. I'm being generous. I'm trying to love people, and yet I'm hurting. I look at people who don't care at all about love, who don't care about all about anything, and yet they're doing, how is it? It's the wolf is unjust. A doesn't always lead to B. Just look at how our society is wired. Just look at what money rewards. What does money reward today in our society? Money rewards celebrity. If you're born with the good looks and you have some narcissistic tendencies and you can promote yourself, you can make a lot of money. I ask little kids today, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and they asked me that when I was young. What do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be an architect. Or I want to be a dentist. Herbie wants to be a dentist. I don't know what God, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, yes, you got to love it. I want to be a fireman. I want to be this. I want to be that. You know, what do kids most of the time say today? I want to be famous. I want to be famous. Hey, we're living in a capitalistic society, and if you can use your trade in the entertainment industry and make a lot of money, fine. I'm not saying that's bad or you shouldn't be that way. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying let's all just agree at the same time that what would happen if the wolf induced the best minds into education? What would happen if the wolf induced the best minds to be teachers? What would happen if the wolf, the salary, induced the best minds to be engineers, to be scientists, to be in professions that would raise the boats, raise the water level across the board? The wolf doesn't reward that. Doesn't reward it at all. Many people who are aware of the history of Simi Valley understand that there's been a tectonic shift in how things happen in Silicon Valley. Used to be that the greatest engineers and minds would go there and they would ply their trades, ply their creativity, ply their science to have breakthroughs that would bless all of the world, the semiconductor, the microwave, code for the World Wide Web. And I read an article not long ago that was lamenting how some people see how it has changed. And it changed with Facebook. Got a college student, some other smart people, they write code, and all of a sudden, bam, bam, IPO of billions and billions of dollars. And now, apparently what's happening is the best and brightest minds, instead of laboring in a lab coat, in anonymity, in a room, being spurred on by the creative and discovery process for the hopes that there will be some breakthrough thing that will impact all society and impact you financially. You'll make some money off it, but really being driven by this larger income goal. Now, some of the best minds are just taking off-the-shelf products, reformatting them to have a successful IPO, and innovation is being thwarted. It's being thwarted by the wolf that always wants us to get rich quick instead of hit the same nail every day. Hit it every day with faithfulness. Not only is the wolf unjust, these are four things so far that are somewhat negative, but money is not inherently negative. The Bible says that money is a root of all sorts of evil, not all evil. Money is not a root for all evil, but we have to understand these characteristics for the wolf. But at the same time, the wolf has untapped potential. He's like a little ornery kid that's got all kind of, but you go, if that dude ever got his life in line, oh my goodness, the world would change. The wolf has untapped potential. One of the stories that Jesus told, one of the parables he told about money, is one of the most difficult passages in the entire Bible. And because it's so difficult, you've probably never heard it. Because people just don't want to talk about it. Because what? That cannot mean that. That's just... But when you understand the personality of the wolf and he has untapped potential, this thing starts to make sense. Here's a little background. It's a story where there is there's a manager and there is an owner. There's an owner of all these resources, all these businesses, and there's somebody who manages his affairs. Now, this actually relates to us and God. The owner represents God, and the manager represents us, we who don't own anything. For my kids, there was two things I've tried to build into my kids. I knew if they could get these two things, Libby and I knew if they could get these two things, life would be just okay. Number one, they could come to know their Creator and have a great, intimate relationship where their master was Jesus, and they were just secure in His love and just took their marching orders from Him. And then number two, if they could handle money. If they understood how to use money instead of money use them. If you could set your kids up, or you, at this point, if you can get the master situation right and how to handle money, everything else will be downhill. You have no problems in life. It'll all eventually work out fine. So Jesus is teaching us that this manager he doesn't own anything. And so that's how to work with our kids. You own nothing. Nothing is yours. You and I came into this world butt naked. And we will leave being worm food. Nothing will we take with us. The things that you think are so awesome right now will be left behind in an open house sale with tags on it for people to buy. You own nothing. You for a time have something, but you own nothing. And so Jesus is illustrating this point, and this manager actually gets fired by the owner. And before he's actually ushered out the door, before it's sealed the deal, he just kind of sniffs that he's not going to have his job much longer. He takes matters into his own hands. Check this out. Luke chapter 16. So, summoning his master's debtors, one by one, he said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, "How much do you owe?" He said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings." Now, there's a lot of applications from this, but let's just make sure that we understand the main point and what's happening here. This guy uses his influence to buy friends. He says, right now, while I have the authority, mark down your bill. Right now, I'm going to give you a 50% discount. And by doing so, he buys a friend so that when he loses his job, somebody's going to be positively predisposed to him. And Jesus uses this in a positive way. It's a positive way. He doesn't say, this is an awful thing with this guy. He said, learn something from this situation. This guy understands how money works, and he leverages it. There's untapped potential in it. And Jesus says, only the sons of light, people who are aligned with God, would understand the untapped potential of money and use it, and actually use it. Bono underwent a lot of criticism when he became really good friends with George Bush. You know, someone from the quote-unquote Hollywood elite on the left and the insider political on the right, they became really good friends. Why become friends? Because George Bush sponsored billions of dollars to aid for AIDS in South Africa or in Africa. And Bono said this. He said, let's be clear. I can be bought, but I'm not cheap. I love that. I can be bought. George Bush bought his friendship. He invested in something that created an attachment. This is part of what Jesus is saying. He's saying you can use money to buy people in a positive way. You know, that sounds so dirty. Well, just stay with me for a moment here. I just talked with a friend of mine this last week. She talked about her first date with her now husband. Her husband took her on a date. They went to an expensive restaurant. He said, what would you like to eat? And she kind of talked about what she wanted, and the server came over and he ordered the dish for her and then came to him and he said, oh, I'll just have a side salad. And she said, how come you're just having that? He said, well, I ate earlier. I'm not all that hungry. She came to find out later on he only had so much cash with him and that he wanted her to have the greatest meal and then whatever's left over, he would buy for himself. He bought himself a wife. He invested in that first date. And some of you are going, how come I can't find a woman? Because you're freaking cheap. That's why. You're cheap. You thought you could buy yourself a wife. You can. You just got to start there. It takes other things, but money gets you in the door. Contrast that with another friend of mine. He said, my first date with my now wife, I can't believe I'm married because we went out on our very first date, and I took her to Starbucks, and I proudly announced we were going to use a gift card my mom had given me. It was hard to get a second date. It was. I have friends, some of my best friends, they bought our friendship. You mean by that? What do you mean by that? Well, they invested. They took us on an expensive vacation we normally wouldn't have, and they paid for it. They had a lot of Jack. They got a lot of the wolf. A lot. And they actually invested in our friendship. They invested in us as a couple. In essence, it bought a friendship. That's together. They weren't trying to use us. I'm not saying use people or abuse people. I'm just saying money has untapped potential, and here's the deal. If you can get the wolf to heal, oh my goodness. If you can get the wolf to heal and then you sick him on what needs to go after, my friend, you have a power source. When the wolf heals because you're aligned under your master and you can control the wolf, there's a power source that is amazing. Making investments in people's lives, throwing money to things that actually make a difference. I learned this the hard way when we had an accident in our house, when Libby and I have people over to entertain them, have a party or have a dinner, you know, a normal housewarming gift that somebody brings is a bottle of wine. That's good. We like that because whenever somebody brings us wine, it's always better wine than we currently have. Always is. It's always better wine than we will buy. There's three kinds of wine. There's red, there's white, and there's cheap. I don't really know any other kind. Those are the only kind of wines. When we go out to eat, if we're going to have any wine, I don't look at the descriptions. I look at the number. That's all I look at the number. And so anytime somebody brings us over wine, it's always better wine than we have or that we would normally buy. So we were stockpiling these wines, like, oh, these are awesome. We had this rack, this like three-tiered rack. We were kind of putting these wines in there and we're saving them for a good occasion. And then we had an extended family event where people came over with their dishes and their crock pots and we needed every inch of counter space. So Libby's aunt took this thing out of a servant heart. She picked it up to take it down in the basement to create some space. On her way down the basement, the rack broke. Every bottle fell out of the rack, bounced down the steps, hit the concrete, and broke. Smashed all over the place. I'm going, oh! Like hundreds of dollars are in liquid right there with glass shards. I don't care. I'll tell you what. You give me wine now, that sucker gets drunk. That wine represented untapped potential that was lost. We think about how many people could we have honored by pulling out great wine? How many times could we have just had a nice dinner and there was taste and tannins and liquid that we normally wouldn't have? Well, the untapped potential of that, or shoot, even giving it to somebody else. It was wasted, it was broke, it was shattered. The wolf doesn't want us to see that way. The wolf doesn't want us to train it so it heals and actually does something for us. But I tell you what, when that happens, it is a power. And this is why Jesus said, learn from this. Learn the power of how to manage money and to invest in people, invest in things, invest in your family. Understand that. God, I pray that the ways of the wolf have been exposed, and I don't want us to fear the wolf. I don't want us to do that at all. I just want us to be aware of it as you were, as you made us aware of it. So I'm asking, as we walk out of here today, we would just have good conversation. If we're with our friends, we'd have really great conversation with our friends or with our dates or with our spouses. Just get us on a good process, a good journey of seeing the reality of money and the reality of you and coming to choose you and putting money in its proper place. I look forward to seeing us attain freedom and peace that we don't have right now. Amen. You know, we're gonna sing a song right now about the things that we're handling, and we're gonna try to focus ourselves. Excuse me. Focus ourselves in on God. Scott is with us. Scott, he's gonna lead us here. Scott, you've been at Crossroads like about a year now, right?
Right. Yeah, just over a year.
All right, and. I know there's some people here probably newer, maybe came to Awaited. Any helpful hints you have for those of us who are newer?
I would just say keep an open mind, keep an open heart. This time last year, probably late December, I was walking out of this place in the middle of services just because what you were saying or Chuck was saying wasn't always gelling with me, and I just wasn't in a place to be able to receive.
You're saying we offended
what was
you.
Being said. Yeah, you did. It was just, you know, using the Bible as the source that was backing up your points. It wasn't really a truth to me at that point. And I was really bothered by that. But you know, January 1st of last year, I was kind of in a low place. I'd been listening to Big Bad Wolf for many years and just feeling like all of my successes and failures were defining my happiness, and finally just at a low point surrendered and asked Jesus to reveal himself if he was real. I wasn't sure if he was real or not. And you know, when you pray with an open heart and keep an open mind for Jesus to come into your life, he will do it every time. And so my encouragement to you is if you're new here, you don't have to believe that Jesus is real. You don't have to believe that Jesus is God. But I would say ask him when you're by yourself or with people, just pray for it and see what happens, because he can turn around a sinner like me, I'm proud to say I'm now a believer in Jesus. So
awesome. Why don't we stand right now and let's just sing this, make it a prayer.